Crime Curious is a true crime podcast that takes an in-depth look into real cases through the lens of a trained investigator and former prosecutor turned judge.
If you are sensitive to expletives, anatomical descriptions, and accurate descriptions of crime scenes, this podcast may not be suitable for you.
Have you or someone you love been a victim of a crime that's still unsolved? Crime Curious has teamed up with one of the top private investigation services in the Indiana and surrounding area. If you have listened to us long enough, you know that we do not seek out services or products that are meaningless to us or hold no real value. So you can trust us when we say that Corbett Investigations comes with decades of experience you won't find anyplace else. Corbett Investigations is run by a former homicide commander of one of the country's most successful homicide units, has put over 400 people in prison for homicide, handled over 1,100 death investigations, and solved 33 cold case murders. To be real with you, Mr. Corbett had a really difficult time telling us what we should highlight in this segment because he does not like to sound like he's bragging. Solving crimes has been his life's passion, and he has never done it for the accolades or recognition. He has a whole team behind his services that help him be so successful, as they specialize in things like bloodstain analysis, ballistics, crime scene reconstruction, and forensic pathology, just to name a few. When you contact Corbett Investigations, you talk directly with Tim Corbett. He is hands-on with every case and can travel anywhere that's needed to get the job done. Corbett Investigations prides itself on honesty, truth, feet to the ground, real investigation work, and the strength to stand up to whatever is in the way of solving the crime. Corbett Investigations specializes in complex homicide cases, sex offenses, and criminal investigations that are old and new. Tim and his team have a reputation for finding witnesses and information that others could not. Although we hope none of our listeners ever need private investigation services, if you do, we recommend contacting Corbett Investigations and mention this segment on Crime Curious for a free consultation. Contact Tim Corbett today at 574-229-8115. You can also check them out on Facebook at Corbett Investigative Services, Inc. or their email, tim@tcorbett.org. That's tim@tcorbett.org. Thanks for listening, and now on to the show. Welcome to Crime Curious. I'm Charnel.
I'm Megan.
We're shaking our gree-gree. How's everybody doing today? I'm coming at you with another horrific case. And you know, this is another case suggestion from a listener. They send us some of the worst and also most, you know, interesting cases. So thank you.
They want us to cover the bad stuff because they want opinions. So I can respect that.
We want to thank Nicole for this case suggestion. And I actually am really surprised that I had not covered this before because it really sounds like something that we would have covered before our third full year of podcasting.
We don't know every murder that's happened.
That's true. Thank God, because I'm not sure it could live in my brain.
Agreed.
There are times where people will message and say, have you covered the case of so-and-so? I have to look it up.
Agreed.
Because I'm like, we've covered hundreds of cases.
I know.
I'm not sure.
I've been there too. And I'm like, I don't know. That sounds really familiar. Mm-hmm. But is it because I started to research it? I heard about it and put it on my list, or we covered it years ago.
Exactly.
And I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. This case is going to leave everybody angry. I'm just going to warn you up front.
Are you bringing me something unsolved or solved, but angering?
It's just all around. Yes. Can I just say yes?
Yes.
I'm just going to say yes to all of that.
Okay.
So get your comfort item. You know what mine is.
I don't have mine with me. I left it at home.
And you guys know we do not bash law enforcement on this podcast, but
we will. We do identify bad work.
That's right. We will, without a doubt, share stories and side with families of victims who have been mishandled by poor law enforcement work, because there is good and bad in any profession, which is what we often say.
What a great public service announcement you just made.
Well, I think that the reason why this case was suggested to us was to help explain how some of these things could have taken place and why it should have been handled differently. But
is this case to the point where I can make commentary?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes,
I don't, I want to make sure, you know, I never want to get myself in trouble. I don't I want know. An active or an open case. And I would, I will make my opinions regarding whether I think something was good or bad work if I know I'm not going to get sued afterward.
For sure. Exactly. As always, to our good law enforcement coworkers out there, we say thank you for what you do. Thank you for listening to this case and learning what not to do in the future of your very important work.
I firmly believe that our law enforcement people who listen to this or who have been on here or assisted us with cases are the same people who would say, well, that was wrong. Yeah, that's exactly. Not how you do
you
that.
You don't do that.
Correct.
Yeah, I know. Let's go to Christmas Day 2006.
You're bringing me a Christmas case?
I am. I know. I'm sorry. And Merry I just Christmas. Cannot believe, if I've heard of this before, I full on blocked it out because it's just so jaw-droppingly unimaginable.
Okay.
Ugh.
Spit it out.
Okay. We're going to Ryan Waller's house. Okay. Actually, we're going to his parents' house.
Do Christmas, we like Ryan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Christmas 2006, Ryan was due to show up for Christmas festivities at his parents' house. I will tell you guys, too, when you go, if you try to research this case on your own, Godspeed, good luck to ya, because there is so much inaccurate dates and information out there. I had to go to court records. It was the only way. This case was actually suggested to us a while ago, but it has taken me a while to actually get effective
and you've read transcripts. So these were things that were testified to were placed on the record.
Yes, or are in affidavits or are in appeals.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's where I got those dates from. So if I say a date wrong, it is only because it is in court records that way.
We and usually we, try to make those accurate.
Right.
Just throwing that out
there.
That's
what I thought too.
I'm not perfect, but I try.
Well, I don't think you'd be off by days, which is what others
not
were.
Usually.
So Ryan's close with his family. So when he doesn't show, this is suspicious, right? But before we get to that, I want you to get to know Ryan and his beautiful girlfriend, Heather, a bit first.
Okay.
So we know this case starts Christmas Day 2006 because they don't show up for Christmas. But Ryan was born February 12th, 1988 in Knoxville, Tennessee. Growing up, his parents said that he loved music. He enjoyed playing the guitar and rapping along with his favorite songs. His father would say that he had a knack for picking up beats and remembering the lyrics of songs after only listening to them for the first time. Ryan moved to Phoenix, Arizona, where he graduated from high school and began dating 21-year-old Heather Kwan. They were very happy, and recently, within the last couple of months, they had made the decision to move in together. Ryan was aspiring to be in a rock band someday, and Heather was just finishing up her college diploma with plans to attend law school.
Okay.
They were a great match. They had been dating for 8 months. They were kind of like that opposite attracts situation.
Totally know what that is.
I saw that described several times. Heather, drop dead gorgeous, by the way, was described as being thoughtful and a passionate young woman who knew what she wanted and she was really going places. She had dreams of becoming a defense attorney someday. And she wasn't, when she wasn't attending classes, she was volunteering for the Big Brother, Big Sister program. Her family would say that from a very young age, Heather seemed to sense when another was hurting and gave her friendship to those who needed it most. So, as I had said, the family becomes aware December 25th that something is wrong.
Yeah, because if somebody doesn't show up to
Christmas,
there's a problem.
Right. But the case actually starts on December 23rd, 2006. When Ryan and Heather were excited to have just a few days to spend before Christmas together, they had a roommate, Alicia, but Alicia was out of town for the holidays.
They got to play house.
Yeah, they got to be just alone, just the two of them. On the 23rd, and this is one of the dates that you will find wrongfully dated in many articles, they had planned to spend a quiet evening together, taking advantage of that being alone. They're watching TV when someone knocks on the door. Now, they were not expecting anyone, and they had been in the living room. They had only been living there for about a month and a half, okay? Ryan went to see who it was while Heather remained seated on the couch in the living room.
Typical.
Mm-hmm. There were two other people on this other side of the door. These people were named Richie Carver and his father, Larry Carver. They went there to collect some items that Richie had, according to court documents. He had left on the premises. Now,
from when he rented it?
He did. And you will find that many articles say that Ryan and Richie knew one another and that they lived together. That's not true. Richie rented that place before Ryan and Heather had moved in. And Ryan only knew of Richie because Richie would show up to get his mail from time to time. But he also found him, peeking around like he wanted to steal valuables from the location. Okay. So, according to court documents, the reason that Richie and Larry Carver were there is because they wanted to confront Ryan about a rumor that was circulating that Ryan had pistol whipped Richie on one of these times that he caught him sneaking around the house.
Okay.
Okay.
Which clearly didn't happen.
No, it was not a rumor. Right.
And you have to protect your reputation, right, Richie?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just let it go.
Really what the speculation is that the reason that they showed up is because they were hoping that no one was home.
They were casing the place.
They were. So as I had indicated, Ryan had caught Richie sneaking around the property and any time that Ryan caught him, he's like, I left my this and that here. Oh, I was looking for this that I Dude. Left here. He didn't leave anything
on the property.
The landlord
needs to trespass this guy. Yeah. He clearly has either been evicted or moved at this point and doesn't live there. There's no reason for him to be there.
Regardless of the real intentions of why they were there, Ryan was just a little too slow to anticipate that the two men had evil intentions. They pushed their way in as Ryan tried to push the door back shut. Richie was able to get his arm inside the doorway, and he shot Ryan in the face.
Oh.
Ryan fell to the ground and was shot a second time as the two men were able to walk inside. They found Heather in the living room, and they shot her in the head. She was dead immediately. The two stole a computer and other guns that were in the home and left, believing both victims to be dead. Heather was gone, okay?
Oh, no.
Ryan, however, although rendered unconscious, survived.
Shot in the head and the face.
Twice. So let's go. Now, remember I started this episode on Christmas Day, 2006.
When he didn't show up.
2 days after this incident happened with Ryan and Heather. So he had previously made these plans. He's going to Christmas dinner. When dinner came and went and he still hadn't called or showed, his father, Don, went to, continued to try to call him, and there's still no answer. So his parents decide to go over to his house to see if everything's okay. They're very worried at this point. In their heads, they're thinking, did they get in a car accident? Are they sick and just didn't tell us, you know? Just before 8 p.m. that evening, they arrive at Ryan and Heather's home and they begin knocking on the door, ringing the doorbell. There's no answer, no noise coming from inside, so now they're panicking. They don't know whether he's home or not. The garage door is closed, so they can't tell if his car is there. All they know is that it's extremely uncharacteristic of him, so they call the police to request a welfare check to be done. As someone who has had to respond to investigation calls on Christmas Day, I can tell you that most police stations are operating on a skeleton crew. It's Phoenix, Arizona. They have a lot of calls. Yes, many of them are domestic violence calls as families get together and they drink too much. There's suicide crisis calls. All those will take...
Operating while intoxicated. Yep.
All of those are going to take leverage over a welfare check.
Correct.
I'm not telling you this is an excuse, just a sad reality. And tragically, it takes the police 3 hours to actually have someone come to Ryan's house for the welfare check. Two officers arrive at the home where Ryan's parents are still waiting, and they had been knocking on the doors and windows calling out to see if anybody was home. One of the officers shines his flashlight through one of the windows, and he sees what he believes to be a body lying on the floor.
This is good reason to enter. Exigent circumstances.
This is why they suggested this case to us. He has no idea if this person is dead or alive. I do not know what position the person that they could see was in. I do not know if blood was visible.
It doesn't matter.
They are all responding to a call for a welfare check on an adult person. And I say this because this is the first point of contention in the case. And truly, I believe one of the reasons why this case was suggested to us. The officers claim that they do not have the appropriate amount of probable cause to enter the home without a warrant, and they do not call for an ambulance. I take this to mean that they did not have a clear enough line of sight to see that injuries had happened. Remember, the door was answered, I don't know why I put that. Sorry, guys. I'm like reading from my notes and it says, remember the door was answered, so there is no sign of a forced entry. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Remember, there isn't a sign of forced entry because Ryan had actually answered the door.
Right.
They did force their way in.
They pushed through him, which is a home invasion, they didn't break anything way in.
Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. There was no overturning of furniture. There was nothing visible to have shown that
it doesn't matter.
You know, in terms of what they might be looking at. I know it doesn't. You know it doesn't.
Well, I just want to make it clear right now for anybody saying, oh, well, you know, no, there probably wasn't probable cause. Clear exception to the search warrant requirement is to do a welfare check. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have probable cause. And you don't have to have signs of a forced entry. What you can have is that a person hasn't shown up where they were supposed to. Now you can see through the window a person laying on the floor who is not responding to hours of knocking. Mm-hmm. This is an absolutely appropriate way to get into a home. Mm-hmm. And any police officers that is worried that they're going to be in trouble for that, there isn't. There, you have some immunity from liability for making that welfare check. And if you were to get in and find criminal activity afoot, the next appropriate thing to do is to stop searching at that point, secure the person committing the crime, and get a search warrant.
Right.
So that just solves all of those problems
right there.
Is this person new? Did they not sit through my criminal justice class that I taught, that I teach?
I like that you said that because my next line was, okay, guys, I'm sure the responding officers were likely newer because they're working the night shift of Christmas night.
Yeah.
I think at this point, they weighed the problems of an unlawful entry against the wrong circumstances.
Law enforcement out there, if you ever encounter this situation, break in and do the damn welfare check. Yeah. CYA later. If they're fine, if they're passed out on the floor because they were doing
meth, but,
and that's the problem, and now you have a criminal thing because there's meth everywhere, go get your search warrant then. You had a valid reason to go in.
They wait until they have a search warrant in place before going inside, Megan. So, regardless, it took an hour to get that search warrant. I'm glad it wasn't longer because it could have been. It's Christmas night.
Listen, I'm the person they go to get the search warrants. It can take a while.
It's literally 11 o'clock at night on Christmas night by the time they arrive on scene. So you know it's well after midnight before they are bugging that judge and getting that,
The judge or magistrate on call. And luckily, we live in a small community where I know police officers. Right. And if I see somebody calling, I'm going to answer and I'm going to meet them. Or I'm going to tell them, come in my house right now. Yeah. Sign
but
a
this
warrant.
Is Phoenix, Arizona.
Correct. On Christmas
night. Yes. So they get it. They do get a search warrant signed. But worst of all, Ryan's parents are still at the home waiting for someone, anyone, to do something to help.
I would have broken.
Ugh. I know. I was thinking that, too. I know. Now, I had read that within that hour, 10 more police officers and a helicopter arrived. But I find that extremely hard to believe. Even for the sake of arranging all that, it would take a while to get a helicopter in air, blah, blah, blah. So if you've read...
Why would they need a helicopter?
I don't know, because they haven't even entered. They don't even know. That's why I'm saying when I read that, I was like, ooh, I think your timelines are a little mixed up here. That probably happened after.
It's weird.
But it's not happening. It didn't happen before they returned with the search warrant.
The only reason I can think of to have a chopper anyway is if they were actively looking for somebody hiding or running from there. But you're going to be able to determine that they've been there longer than a couple minutes, a couple hours when you get in there.
There's a lot that you would think they'd be able to determine that they do not, Megan. All right. So let's get into it. I told you you're going to be real angry about this. So they get in and they hear, this is the other thing. I'm sorry, I skipped over a thing. Instead of just breaking in, they have a warrant. They call a locksmith and they wait for the locksmith to come to enter the home. I don't know. I don't understand Arizona law.
Call the landlord if you really want to try to be nice, but break in.
They called a locksmith.
I'm not faulting these parents because they were trusting law enforcement.
But y'all, I would have broke that damn window out, crawled in it myself, saw my dead child and his girlfriend open the door and yelled at law enforcement at this point.
Right, right. No.
What are they going to do? You know what? Arrest me for home invasion then, because I'm going to go in here.
Yes, they did. And I don't know how long that really took. And I kind of didn't believe time frames anyway when I was looking things up. So we know that a locksmith was involved. We had to wait for that person on Christmas night, by the way, to come unlock the door. Now, shockingly, as they enter, they hear Ryan.
No, he's lived for 2 days.
Ryan is still alive.
Oh, I almost dropped. You
did almost. Just, woo, that really got
you. Dropped the microphone right in my lap and took my teeth out.
I know. Ryan is covered in big black and purple bruises on his face. In particular, his eye is dark, swollen, and bleeding. He's alive, speaking, though not coherently, and he is clearly injured. But not clear to what extent. As the police move through the doorway, which Ryan has actually unlocked for them, okay?
Really?
Yes. They get a locksmith to unlock one of the doors, and then there's another door. They're like at the back of the house. That's where Ryan, that's where they entered. That the back of the door is where, or excuse me, the back of the house, Ryan was still like lying by that door. Okay. And so he is able to like stand up, and in the commotion, he wakes up and he stands up and he unlocks this door.
Holy shit.
So they come in and they see Heather's body lying on the floor in the living room. She's clearly deceased from a gunshot wound.
Jesus Christ, they're gonna head. They're going to think this is a murder suicide.
The first impression by the police is that Heather has been murdered, shot in the head in her living room, and that Ryan must be the perpetrator.
Yep. Because he shot himself in the head, right?
And they think all of his injuries are defensive wounds. Megan, they haven't recognized that he is shot.
They don't realize he's been shot in the face?
Nope.
Or the head?
Anywhere. They think all of his wounds are defensive wounds. He's got a huge black eye. Half of his, you know, huge black. I'll just tell you guys right now, you can look up on YouTube the interrogation. I don't recommend it. It's hard to watch. He is clearly struggling. And he does look like he has defensive wounds. His eye is so freaking swollen that he can't open it. It's black, his whole nose, everything.
They're going to find a bullet in his face.
Well, they think that his injuries are defensive wounds, so they don't take any time to ask questions. Right off the bat, they treat it as if it's domestic violence, which is common on a Christmas night,
and murder.
Right? They begin shouting at him to get on the ground. Now, he's conscious, but he's disoriented. He looks very confused. He's asking them what's happening. He doesn't appear to know what's going on. Police move in on him, slamming him to the ground, and they put him in handcuffs. They actually broke his jaw in this process. They slammed him on the ground so hard.
Do we know that, or do we do?
Yes.
I just want to make sure it wasn't a bullet that had broken his jaw.
No, the bullets weren't near his jaw. No, okay. This was when he was put on the ground. He's battered and bloodied. Then he's put in the back of the police cruiser while they begin to tape off the crime scene. They process the whole crime scene with him in the back of the cruiser for hours.
Did they call for an ambulance?
Sure didn't. Oh, they did take Heather's body away.
But they didn't have him looked at?
No. They did not ask for him to be looked at. Ryan is telling them that he's injured. From what he can coherently say, you guys have to understand he has 2 bullets in his brain. He has been in and out of consciousness for 2 days. He is not okay. He doesn't remember anything. Okay.
But he has a brain injury.
He does. So they declare Heather deceased. You know, they remove her body.
Does he
call
even know
EMS.
She's dead?
No, he doesn't know anything that's going on. He's very confused. And I wanted to ask you, is it required by law that they offer someone medical attention when they can see that they're injured?
Slippery slope.
Okay.
Yes and no. Yes, I think that you would do a cursory assessment by EMS when they arrived. And you would have been able to, I would assume, with some hands on gloved up assessment, mm-hmm. found that there were 2 holes in somebody's head, mm-hmm. or at least be able to articulate, are you hurt and how?
And he was telling them that he was hurt. Okay.
But he didn't know he was shot?
No.
Okay.
He could not, at that point in time.
All right.
No.
The other time frame where
we do get to that. Okay. He does start remembering.
I figure you're
going to
get there. But the other time frame is after you have the person in custody, assuming that law enforcement really thinks that they have taken somebody into custody who's just murdered someone, okay? And they might have been quite forceful if he didn't appear to be complying at that point, right? And when they throw him into the ground.
He wasn't complying. He was just asking them what's happening, what's going on.
But if they're thinking, Charnel, that he's not following lawful commands and perhaps he could not because of his brain not working.
He absolutely couldn't. Yeah.
Then he's being forcefully taken to the ground, which clearly they're going to consider that he's resisting and obstructing, and he's thinking this is police brutality. This is why these things can be hard and very confusing to make statements about, okay?
Yeah.
In hindsight, with an innocent person, of course it looks terrible. If he was guilty, would you feel the same way?
But he wasn't being combative at all.
Right.
He was asking them what was going on. The other thing is he is slurring his speech
so
really bad.
So this is the part where I have major concerns then, where I think the police went hugely wrong. Not assessing him there is one thing. Fine. You think you have the worst criminal ever. He's just murdered his girlfriend. So you get him to the station, okay? Once you get him to the station, you have got to make the defendant comfortable to have a conversation with them if you're going to interview them, and you're going to offer them medical attention or at least want them to be seen at this point. Jail policy, if they're going to lodge somebody, and this isn't the police, this is corrections, okay? If you're going to lodge somebody, they need to be medically cleared from any injuries.
Yeah.
So I happen to know a captain from a local sheriff's office who is never going to let somebody who's clearly injured like that stay without being assessed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what they do, they leave him in the back of the police cruiser. They don't offer him any medical help. Hours later, after the crime scene is processed, they then take him to the interrogation room. And it's all on video.
I'm not shocked.
It's all on video. You can watch it if you want. You can see that he is hurting, and he is taking what looks like a really, or he has taken what looks like a really serious beating. His head and his face are bloody. One of his eyes almost looks as though someone like punched it all the way in. Okay. Unbeknownst to the police, it was actually black and swollen as a result of the gunshot wound. If they had taken a moment to have a medical professional look at him, they would have known that. The interrogation is over an hour long, and in the video, Ryan is heard moaning in pain and putting his head on the table in complete exhaustion. He struggles with simple comprehension and is unable to answer basic questions. And instead of thinking this could be a result of trauma to the brain, they assume that this is his way of trying to get out of the murder of his girlfriend. Ryan tells them he has no recollection of the events from the break-in. He can't even remember that he finished high school. He hardly seems to know anything about his girlfriend, Heather, including her last name or her age.
And he's not alerted, oriented as to place and time. He doesn't know. Oh, my God. Mm-mm. No, no, no. This is so bad.
No.
This is when you were recognizing. There are multiple opportunities for law enforcement to have recognized that this person needs to be medically cleared.
Absolutely. Something's very, very off with his demeanor, as you can tell in the video. They just think he's being difficult because he's, you know, so they keep pushing on. The officer asks Ryan directly what happened to his face. At first, he says he doesn't know. Then he says maybe Heather hit him, and it was that would be an accident. And as they keep asking questions, it's like the story to them seems to go more wild, because then he starts talking about people who aren't there, like the Carvers. He forgets who his roommate is. He thinks Heather is someone else's girlfriend. At one point in time, he tells them he was shot in his face, to which point they laugh and say, if you had been shot, that's impossible. If you had been shot in the face and in the head, you wouldn't be talking to us right now.
Well, he barely is, sir.
For sure. A little over a half an hour into the interrogation, the story that Ryan is telling starts to make sense. He mentions a man named Richie Carver and his father. He says he came to the house, hit both him and Heather with bows and arrows. Remember, he's got a traumatic brain injury, right? He's not, or like you said, he's not oriented. He reveals that he thinks that he's been shot in the eye, but the detective doesn't seem to believe much of what he's saying. They even make statements that, as I said, that it would be impossible for him to still be talking to them if he'd been shot. After an hour or so of obvious pain, the detectives says, lean closer. Can I see your eye wound closer? And that's when the officer notices a small hole in the side of his nose. And he says, be right back. Then he calls emergency services in to get Ryan to the hospital. It's now been over 6 hours since Ryan was first found in his home, and much longer than that since he had been shot.
He survived 2 days with two bullets in his head. Mm-hmm.
He's immediately listed in critical condition due to an infection that had spread to his brain.
Also makes you not make sense or remember things.
Correct. According to Ryan's father, Don, the physician told him that the infection had spread because of the delay in receiving medical intervention. Of course, right? One of the bullets had entered the left side of his face and was stuck behind his eye, which had caused his eye and brain to swell. There was a ton of internal injury due to bullet splinters and bone fragments. His jaw was broken, which had happened, as I said, during the arrest. The bullet entered through the left side of his face, and a bullet fragment lodged in his left temporal lobe behind his left eye. And he did have surgery, by the way, to try to help
alleviate the swelling.
Pressure mm-hmm.
and He's, remove the bullet.
Yeah.
There was should be a second bullet in his head.
He was shot twice. I think the other one might have exited. I'm not sure. I did not find.
It didn't come up in any reports.
No, and I am sketched to believe certain articles. So
okay. At least they weren't in the court transcript.
No, it just said he had been shot in the face.
Okay.
Actually, it said it seems as though there's. Yeah, I'm not sure because now that I'm reflecting back on.
Well, you're
on it
pointing at the left side of your nose, which is where they saw the hole.
That's where the hole. That's where the hole was. But he was shot
in your face. Then that would make sense if it went up and then got caught in. God, that'd get caught in the right orbital bone.
It had, and it had splintered. Well, what did I say now? Did I get my rights and lefts mixed up?
I don't know trajectories unless I see a crime scene analyst.
Oh, he was shot twice because it said one of the bullets had entered the left side of his face and was stuck behind his eye, which had caused his eye and brain to swell.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there were bullet splinters. That must be the other bullets as well. Or if the bullet itself had splintered. But regardless, he spent 35 days in the hospital recovering. He lost his left eye and a large portion of his brain. Ugh. And this would result, for the rest of his life, resulted in suffering from extreme seizures. While Ryan was in the hospital, the Phoenix police were able to identify and locate the real perpetrator. Wow, Charnel. Real
it's okay.
perpetrators of the break-in and the murder of Heather Kwan. They quickly arrested Richie Carver, who was the one who shot him through the opening of the door. Ryan and Richie, remember, were really practically strangers. Why did Richie show up at the home to shoot two people he had hardly even knew?
Robbery.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking. They expected him to be out of town for the holidays. So Richie had taken his father, Larry, with him to break in, where the two forced their way into the home, of course. Larry went on the run from the police when his son was caught.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
I only went there for a robbery and you ended up murdering two people. Mm-hmm. I'm out. We aren't friends anymore or family.
We're not family. Nope. His going on the lam didn't last real long. He was caught just a few days later.
Well, I feel like this might be a family that the law enforcement knows.
Is you familiar with, I would say.
They know all the good places they hide out.
The state subsequently charged both Carvers as accomplices with burglary in the first degree, a second class dangerous felony, aggravated assault, which is a third class dangerous felony, murder in the first degree, a class one dangerous felony, theft, which is a class five, and misconduct involving weapons.
Bummed.
Which was
I'm bummed because I didn't hear you say attempted murder. They charged him with assault because he lived, but they clearly
correct.
Meant to kill him.
Correct. I know.
Hindsight is 20/20, Judge. It's fine.
Here's the thing with Richie Carver, the one who actually did the shooting. The jury later actually acquits him of count four for the theft.
Because he didn't actually take anything?
Yeah, they found him guilty on all the other charges, okay? But the theft, they charged Larry with. They decided there's really no proof. Was it him that took it? Was it Larry that took it? I don't know.
They both are guilty of taking it.
They are. Nope. But he got that one acquitted.
You know what? Theft, whatever their charge of theft is, which I don't know. Ours is like robbery. Anyway, larceny, robbery, larceny in a building, however you want to put it. Home invasion, first degree, because there was intent to rob or intent to kill or what have you. Not going to be a life offense. So who cares?
Right. For sure. Because
I don't care.
Because the other
I
one.
I care about the other stuff.
And the other one was. It was a life offense. And Richie Carver was sentenced life without the possibility of parole for the murder. Mm-hmm. As for Larry. Oh, boy, Larry. His wife, Cheryl, would give a very damning interview to police, saying that her husband had confessed to her about the murders right after it happened.
Well, why the hell didn't you tell someone, sweet pea?
She alleged that
when you live a life of crime and you're married to criminals and your family is...
Oh, so you murdered someone tonight.
Listen.
Cool, cool, cool.
Do you know how many families I deal with who it would never occur to them to narc on the person or they're afraid of them or they don't know what will happen? So we can sit here and judge them as much as we want. Yeah. And trust me,
but
we
that's
do.
That's true. Right.
But there's a...
Actually, you get paid to do
I
that,
do
by
get
the
paid
way.
To do that. And I've told people that before. Why are you judging me? I get paid to do that.
That's actually what I...
Because your citizens that you live around told me I should.
Yes.
And they put me here.
They actually elected me to do this.
Correct. Yeah. But again, I just want to make sure you guys know, as much judgment as there is that she knew this and had this information, is she guilty of some potential crimes? Yes, she is. Does it shock me? No, it doesn't.
No, yeah. Because she was honest with them when they came a knocking.
Oh, correct. Correct. Right? I know plenty of honest criminals, if that makes sense, or honest co-conspirators, or let's be honest, honest victims. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that she was not in a good situation.
No. Come
on. What do you do?
Larry doesn't sound like a stand-up
Larry
guy.
Larry comes home and tells you that he was involved in a murder and that he's taken off. And then what? She's going to say, well, honey, I hate to tell you this, but I'm going to have to turn you in. He would have fucking killed her.
Right. For sure. He just got done admitting he helped kill other people.
Oh, he doesn't have to have pulled the trigger to have killed him, Charnel. No.
She alleged that Larry said he was going to help Richie collect some of his belongings that he still had left over at the house that he used to rent. That, you know, the house that was now rented
by
Ryan.
My baby would never rob someone.
When he returned home later that evening, he said to Cheryl, I've just fucked up. I killed two people and I got to get out of here. Now, Cheryl would deny ever saying any of this to police. And in court, she would invoke her spousal testimony privilege, meaning she could not be forced to testify against her husband at his trial. For this reason, the charges against Larry were dropped because there just wasn't enough evidence to prove that he was there without Cheryl's statement. However, Heather Kwan's family was rightfully outraged that she could pull this card and Larry able to walk free. They appealed to have the spousal privilege amended so that it could be revoked if the spouse provides criminal information about their spouse willingly.
Right, to the law enforcement.
Yep.
Agreed.
Their efforts paid off because Heather's law was passed in Arizona and Larry's case would be reopened to include Cheryl's testimony. Ultimately, Larry would be charged with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, burglary, and aggravated assault. Mm-hmm. Ryan was lucky to have survived the shooting, but he lacked a quality of life for many years. He would suffer from painful seizures and permanently blind in his left eye, suffered from brain trauma that was similar to that of someone with dementia. His friends and family reported that he would ask the same questions and tell the same stories over and over again. The Waller family would attempt to sue the Phoenix Police Department for the way that they mishandled the case. They suggested that if not for the police delaying Ryan's medical attention, he would not have the lifelong injuries left to deal with. The lawsuit would never make it to trial. As the city of Phoenix filed a motion for dismissal, they presented a report by a brain expert hired to evaluate Ryan's medical file.
Yeah.
According to the report, the six-hour medical delay would have made no difference in Ryan's overall current medical condition.
With the two-day delay.
Because 2 days had passed.
I knew that was going to be the case.
While the Wallers fully disagreed and had their own expert who believed otherwise, the lawsuit was dismissed. Sadly, on January 20th, 2016, less than 10 years after the shootings, Ryan Waller would have a seizure while out grocery shopping, resulting in a fall where he hit his head so badly that he bled out. So this is a very tragic end to an already tragic and senseless case. So rest in peace, Ryan. Rest in peace, Heather. Thank you, Nicole, for this case suggestion for highlighting areas where there's some significant need for improvement. But I'm not surprised about the lawsuit not going through, too, because of the 2 days that had passed. That is likely when
like it or not, I see these type of civil cases all the time.
Sure.
And it is going to be the case that the 2 days were far more likely to have caused the harm than the 6 hours he was in custody.
Still doesn't make the 6 hours okay.
No, if anything.
And I really hope somebody lost their job over that. But
you know, there are so many opportunities here for growth, and I would venture a guess or hope that some new policies were put in place with that particular department.
I hope so.
One, I hope that their criminal law 101 that police officers take was reviewed in terms of exigency and exigent circumstances specifically to have gained entry there much quicker. And then two, some type of official policy when it comes to somebody clearly injured. You just can't make the assumption. You can make the assumption in your head that you have a suspect here because you have a dead woman in the house with somebody who's still alive. But you can't just immediately, this clearly just didn't happen.
Well, here's the other thing.
You have to assess the situation.
There, it's not like having them medically assessed is letting them walk free. No, you still have them in custody.
Yeah.
Just have them medically assessed. And I get it. I know that there are whiners out there who pretend like they're more hurt than they are to delay the inevitable. I get that. And I am sure as a police officer, that is a bitch to have to deal with. But this is why you have to rather be safe than sorry.
If he hadn't have got up to open the door and they would have found him still laying on the floor, this would have been a totally different situation.
I think so. Well, I hope. I mean, I hope maybe it would have. But
well,
yeah.
You have two unconscious people at this point with gunshot wounds. I think it would have been different. He stood up showing that he apparently was cognizant in some way, shape, or form. And they immediately went. I premonitioned it before you said it. This is a murder-suicide.
Right.
Or he shot her and then, you know, did something else.
And it makes me
laid
wonder.
Laid there for 2 days.
I think he was just in and out of consciousness for those 2 days because he never realized that she was in the living room. You know, we don't know. Had he woke up and used the bathroom anytime? Had he just went right there in the, you know, was there more evidence at the crime scene to show that he had been unconscious that time? We don't know that information.
Well, and that may have never been collected, period.
Right.
Even if it did exist, when you're conducting an investigation as law enforcement, have already made up your mind, you may not look for the other things. Mm-hmm. And that is not a criticism. That is a truth. Yeah. There is investigation bias. Mm-hmm. And we've talked to experts, investigators, and really good detectives before. The ones that are really good at their job are good at their job because they run multiple scenarios through their head immediately.
Alternative hypothesis.
Alternative hypotheses, you call them, of course, in neglect and abuse cases, but it's the same.
It is.
You have to run them all through your head.
You do. And I think the other part that complicates this is the timing.
Agreed.
It is Christmas night.
Running on the skeleton crew with the low men on the totem pole who can't take Christmas off.
Nope. And you just want to get through your night.
Yeah.
And so I think that they were not as diligent at all, obviously. So tragic, tragic case.
Yikes.
So yeah, there's that. Thank you for this suggestion. It is important to keep the memory of these two beautiful souls alive and to keep highlighting, you know, places that we can be doing better as a society.
Yeah, I enjoyed this case simply because it being deserving of being presented, but also because I hope that we fairly and judiciously covered opinions regarding how it was handled. And I'm not afraid to play devil's advocate either. So if any of you are mad at me for anything I said, I love you and I don't care.
I don't think so. And also the right people are behind bars for life now.
Correct.
They were both convicted, you know, even though poor Heather's family had to go through getting a law changed while one of their daughter's murderers walked free for a while. It's all come to the right resolution at this point in time. So are you ready for a brain bath?
Please bathe me.
I have another Goldie from the New York Post. I kind of hit a jackpot for a while on them.
Give me another pig.
It's not a pig.
Damn it.
Like last week.
We needed the trio because we have Kevin Bacon, Albert Einstein, and I don't know.
We've got to come up with another one, but yes, Mr. Pork Loin, something like that.
I love
Instead, it. I have veteran Ohio defense attorney Jack Blacksley suspended for pooping in Pringles can that he dumped at a victim advocacy center.
That's shitty.
So shitty. This guy. A veteran Ohio criminal defense attorney has been suspended for pooping in a Pringles can. By the way, nice aim. Or as my teenagers would say, good aim. I don't know what that's from, but they say it all the time when something is like
either that or this literal asshole is so stretched out that he had no problem just putting the Pringle can up to that butt.
It just seems like
what level?
What was he going to use?
Immaturity.
A chip bag? Can I just, that would be harder. I think a Pringles can is a solid device.
No.
You can just.
It's.
It'll just hold it. Your little butt cheeks will just hold it right there.
You're insinuating you think a seal can be taken. Do you want to know, before you even present this, that we all pass a fucking ethics test? Keep that in mind when you're listening to what this person does.
He had forgot all about that in this moment.
And in his defense, they don't cover shitting in a Pringles can on that.
True.
On that test. Start that I can recall.
Be a lawyer. Does it specifically say that? No.
We should. I should volunteer to make questions up for the MPRE. I really do.
So in finishing this or reading on here, it says that he was suspended for pooping in a Pringles can that he then dumped outside a victim advocacy center, admitting he regularly pulled such stinky stunts to blow off steam. This is what he did for just to let off a little steam and some little poop poops.
He is so angry with the advocates who are out there helping the victims of his clients.
He's a defense attorney. He's a defense attorney.
It doesn't matter. I know defense attorneys who would never do that.
Jack Blacksey's stomach-churning habit emerged as he was suspended from practicing law for a year with 6 months stayed in a 13-page Supreme Court opinion shared by the Court News in Ohio. The ruling revealed that the attorney, who has been practicing for nearly 50 years, was caught on surveillance footage while in the middle of a trial representing an accused child murderer facing the death penalty before heading to a November 2021 hearing. Blacksley deposited his feces into an empty Pringles can and then drove approximately 20 minutes from his home with the can, the open can of feces. The Vietnam vet then drove to Haven of Hope, where a victim advocate representing the family of the slain child and his then current caseworker. He just threw it at them. Surveillance video showed him driving slowly past the parking lot at least twice before he threw the Pringles can containing the feces into the lot.
Felonious assault. Assault with a dangerous weapon.
The advocate, depends on how big it was. The advocate.
It's biohazardous waste, man.
It is.
It's like intentionally giving somebody HIV. Intentionally.
I'm not sure mine is big enough to be
of labeled. Assaultive nature.
No, or biohazardous.
This case
waste.
Is getting worse and worse. It is. I thought he was like throwing the cans out in the yard and driving away.
No, man, this is targeting.
This is targeting. Awful.
Surveillance. So, sorry, I already read that part. The advocate in his case also saw him and later reported him to the police. He pleaded guilty to misdemeanor, disorderly conduct, and littering, paying $248 in fines and court costs.
Littering.
During his disciplinary hearing, Blacksley testified that he had engaged in similar misconduct on at least 10 other occasions that year. He denied targeting the victim advocate, claiming that he randomly chose the locations where he deposited the Pringles cans containing his feces. He tried to dismiss it as a prank, saying that he got a kick out of imagining the look of surprise on people's faces when they found one of his Pringles cans. It was kind of like a release that helped me blow off some steam, he was quoted as saying. Still, the court found clear evidence that Blacksley deliberately chose the parking lot of the advocacy organization as his drop zone.
Drop zone.
Oh, yes.
This man is in need of some psychological assistance. I hope that was also a requirement to him regaining his license since it was just a 1 year suspension. And hopefully he had to apply to get it back. And then two, I hate that they just threw in Vietnam vet in there in the article.
I know.
Because I don't know. I just don't like how it targets veterans. But irrespective, there's plenty of veterans assistance available to practicing members of the bar in all states.
I think they were throwing that in there to try to state to show like he should have known better, just like how he's a lawyer and should have known better.
Listen,
I don't know.
The fact that he says that he didn't know that that was the particular victim's advocate in his murder trial case. Well, let me quote a judge that I know, okay? This isn't PBS.
I'm not Bob Ross, and there aren't any happy little accidents.
This would be so fitting for this one. He did fail to really explain why he pooped in the cans, but he himself ruled out
because he was making a Pringle bomb.
He was. It is a poopy surprise.
Poopy surprise.
And you know,
poopy delivery.
Do you know that cute little Pringles guy with the mustache?
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, I saw a video where Chris Pratt realizes that when he hasn't shaved, Chris Pratt isn't the actor. He's like, oh,
I look like the Pringles guy.
He looks like the Pringles guy.
Yes. Can you imagine just opening your asshole and shitting right into the top of that little cute guy's head? Because that's essentially what you're doing. What do you have against the Pringles guy?
There are so many weird guys out there with so many weird kinks, Charnel.
Well,
that if he wanted to shit in a Pringles can and throw it in his own dumpster all day long, fine.
That's
if you
want to
stick anything else in that Pringles can, you have at it, too.
If you want to stick that Pringles can anywhere else, as long
that
as
is fine with
stay
me.
Out of the ER.
Yeah, and just don't take it on the road.
He claimed, he says, quote, there has to be something going on that's related to some of the things I went through in early life. That's the only explanation that
you would give. Maybe he does have a PTSD diagnosis, but this is something that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And when did this happen?
Well, I closed out of the article.
Well, I'm just saying, if this was
2023, I think.
Okay, so if this is a 1-year suspension and if he hasn't retired, this person is practicing law.
50 years. Oh, and I was reading an article about this that they really, for the term of the sentence of how long he should be, not allowed to practice, they had to like try to find a case that was similar to it, and they really couldn't find a good one. There was one in like Pennsylvania, I believe, but it wasn't similar at all. They tried to kind of claim it was to use it, but it was just like that doesn't track. That's not similar. This happened November 30th, 2023.
Yeah. I'm looking to see if he's still practicing.
And he'd be able to by the end of this year if he's not going to retire. He's been practicing for 50 years, though. It's probably about time to retire.
Actually, they stayed 6 months of it. So he was suspended for 1 year with 6 months stayed for throwing this. And so technically, after 6 months, he was eligible. Here's the disciplinary council versus Blakeslee from the Ohio Supreme Court. I'm going to leave this alone. I don't want to know anymore. And that's it. I just want to leave it at that. It's not in my state, not my person. We're good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Charnel.
You're welcome. I tried to clean. Come on. It's an attorney pooping in a Pringles can.
Yeah. I've never done that. And I can assure you I won't. I mean,
I won't be able to look at a Pringles can and shove my hand in it again.
You know,
without
luckily,
thinking of that guy for a while.
I don't care for Pringles. I don't love them. They're not my thing.
But truly, I think a bag would have been a lot harder to deposit into. Well, so,
and since that's the only thing that I keep at my house, it's not going to happen.
It's not. All right.
I would never desecrate.
The world is safe from your poop
Michigan
throwing in
better
a chip
made
container.
Potato chips, which are clearly the best, most superior potato chips in the entire U.S. I would never desecrate a bag of better made salt and vinegar potato chips.
I just would never desecrate a bag of potato chips. I do.
Oh, I desecrate them through my
through your mouth.
Fuck yeah, girl. I make it look like a Tasmanian devil rolled through there.
Right.
But not through the other end.
No, you leave that. You deposit those deposits in the right bank. Not in a parking lot. In a Pringles can.
Or Michael's. And on that note.
We hope that you keep it curious.
Keep listening, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.